Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There was this age of the internet where you needed people to curate it. Some of the outlets that would just churn these things out, they are chop shops. So you were at a massive disadvantage because you were playing by the rules. Do you at all regret being so thorough? There ended up being a lot of companies that were just kind of snake oil. I recognized that Kickstarters had a tremendous fail rate. You could just kickstart any idea and get a bunch of money, regardless of if the thing made any sense at all. How does somebody know when it's time to kill a project? When has something run its course? When do they pull the plug on that? How do they know? Do you think that you pulled the plug on Mindblow at the right time, or should you have done it sooner? Hey, welcome to the Create Unknown. I am Kevin Lieber. This is the home of Make Something Mean Something. We are live on Discord with all of our patrons, our $2 tots, our dumpster crew, our infantry, our illustrious baby gang. We're also here with some non-patrons, some future patrons. This episode is open to everyone because we are going to be talking. What are we talking about, Matthew Tabor? What are we talking about today?
Well, look, I advertised this in the Discord as, let me pull it up. Let me pull up the announcement so I can read it verbatim here. We'll be talking about how Kevin is a murderer, what he murdered, and why he murdered it. You're a killer. And everybody needs to know that you have just wantonly committed murder in the past. And we get so many questions about it. Literally every single day. We were talking with Dan just a few minutes ago about how it truly is every day. People asking where this show of yours went. And as you and I have talked about it over the years, there's actually a lot to it. And it's something that is interesting for you and Vsauce too, but it's also interesting in its broad, kind of broad importance to how you approach creative things. So we are going to talk about Mindblow and how you killed it. So The first thing is what is Mindblow for the people who do not remember Vsauce 2 back in the day?
Well, first of all, the first thing it's not is mind blown. And that's one of the funniest things to me over the years was the mistake that almost everybody made with the name of the show is calling it mind blown, like past
throwing
tense.
Throwing the
like
end?
Yeah.
At the end?
Like your mind
was blown.
Well,
but you have your mind blown. That's what you watch the show and it's, you know, your mind is blown. Like,
after watching it, that's why the name of the show is Mind Blow.
So this is a mind blow that will leave your mind blown.
Yeah. That's why it was called that. If it was mind blown, then, you know, you wouldn't need to watch the show. I don't think you're already kind of amazed. So the show itself was mind blow. And I got to be honest, I genuinely don't remember when it was named that. The way that it started was that when Michael and I were first making videos on Vsauce 1, Vsauce proper, Vsauce main, he had made a video called Blow Your Mind. I think that's all it was titled.
Okay.
I think it was just Blow Your Mind, like all in caps. And in that video, he just ran through some visual illusions, I think, and something along those lines, just kind of like Easter eggs. I don't know. Anyway, he had asked me if I wanted to do more videos like that. Like, I think that video did well. He didn't want to keep doing them. You know, he had his shows that he was doing regularly, like IMG, probably Loot at that time, and maybe...
Because this was all on the same channel, right? At this time, you and Michael are both doing shows on Vsauce.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. No, I'm wrong about Loot. Okay. That was always, I believe, on Vsauce too, from the beginning. But we were both doing shows on both channels. Like, Michael had a couple shows on Vsauce, I think, and I had a couple shows, and then he had a couple shows on Vsauce too, and I had a couple shows on Vsauce too. As I recall, him making that Blow Your Mind video gave him the idea of, like, just making more videos like that. And either he decided to call it Mind Blow and make it like a recurring show, or I did. I don't really remember. But anyway, that's where the show started, was let's find some things on the internet that are like riddles and illusions and things you didn't know about, like Easter eggs in movies and video games. And that'll be a series.
So it was generally, you're going to get a few minutes of really cool things.
Yeah, like things. Hey, did you know that this sound effect from Golden Axe was actually resampled from First Blood? Like, that was one of the things, okay. I'm pretty sure. It was just like weird stuff like that. Eventually, somehow, Mind Blow got moved over to Vsauce 2. I think maybe when I started doing Vsauce 2 exclusively. And it also turned into a science show. It turned into like a science news show.
Okay, so it evolved into that over time from just like what you described at the beginning is kind of trivia. And I can see that evolving into new tech and science and having your mind blown by innovation as opposed to interesting factoids.
Yeah, I kind of ran out, I think, of the factoids. Maybe I just kind of burned through them and was unable to find things that I thought were mind-blowing. Yeah, I would also
End of the internet. You reached the end. Nothing was interesting anymore. It's like, well, what do you do now?
Yeah. Yeah, I crashed into the brick wall at the end of the internet. It's so funny at this point that I'm like not even able to really coherently remember how the evolution went. But the great thing about the internet is you could just look at the videos and you can see, because they're all up and they're still there, and you could just see how it changed. But then it started being more about innovation, technology, and scientific breakthroughs. And that was really popular because I was able to find things that were really amazing, like across scientific disciplines. So it could be like something, some crazy animal, from biology, or some new like dinosaur, or then it could be something in robotics, or like a new energy frontier, stuff like that. And then a lot of the internet's just started being that. And it's hard to talk about this now because we so quickly take for granted like the way the internet is. Like our brains just change and get and adapt so quickly to... It's hard to almost remember what it was like, 8 years ago, 7 years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
It wasn't that long, but in internet years, it was a lifetime. And it started getting to the point where like the type of stuff that would go in Mind Blow, you would just see everywhere on like Facebook or Twitter or BuzzFeed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those sites, I can't even... list them all now. Like, is Refinery29 one of them? It seems like Facebook was loaded. Oh no, that Refinery29 is a young women's focused digital media company owned by Vice. So I'm not entirely wrong, but the format did change to kind of compilations of things. And if it wasn't specifically a series of cool things like you're talking about, it was conceptually a series of kind of fast moving tidbits. And that got extremely common everywhere. And by 2016, pretty much every video that was auto playing on any site had that format.
Yeah, it was like aggregating. It was aggregating stuff. And
yeah,
in the beginning, Vsauce was built upon aggregating stuff. Like the fact that one of the most popular early shows on Vsauce was IMG was literally just Michael finding funny pictures and putting it in a video is right. Amazing. But at that time, like, that was really fun. That show was great at that time because there wasn't really an easy way to find those funny pictures. So Michael would scour the internet, find a bunch of funny pictures and turn it and, you know, add his own very funny commentary to it. And it was a great show. But eventually the internet just kind of caught up in a way where you sort of just didn't need those videos anymore because you were almost inundated with that stuff. It was just everywhere.
This reminds me of something that we can take a step back, like further back and see, because this one is so good because it's gone now. Like the cycle has, it did its boom and then its bust. And now we don't even think of it. Email forwarding, like forwarding a funny email with a picture or a joke or something like that to everybody on your email list used to be a thing.
Yeah.
In 2002. Yeah, everybody did it. It was the only way to really distribute anything to the people you knew because, you know, only kids were on MySpace and there wasn't anything, any platform. A handful of people had blogs, but if you wanted to just show everybody something, you had to forward that email. Well, eventually that became a super boomer thing to do. The only people forwarding emails, it was like, you know, 81-year-olds who didn't know any better. And now even they don't do it. Nobody does this because Facebook really has been the thing to replace it for younger people, other sites like Twitter and all that. But the boomers, you know, they had a platform to show people on Facebook and it didn't matter whether anybody engaged with it or not. It was the same posting there and sharing something is the same as hitting forward to all used to be with email. But that was a thing that was necessary at the time. So it's weird to think that Michael finding funny pictures and goofing on them was valuable, but it absolutely was, the same way that email forwards were valuable in you know, 2001. So how many of these episodes did you do? Like, so you've solidified Mindblow as a format. It fits in nicely with some of the other shows like IMG and eventually Loot and some of the others. How long is Mindblow running?
I think it stopped at 113 or something like that. Somewhere around that. 117, I don't know.
And 18? How frequent were these? Like, I'm trying to do the math here. If it must have been close to every week or every other week.
I think it was every other week. I think it was like two a month because then I would just create other shows to kind of create a time gap in like being able to find new things. Like I needed there to be enough time passed to be able to find like another batch to make up a video. So that's when shows like BDP, I created BDP, which was, it stood for Build It, Draw It, Play It. That was like an art show where I would just showcase like cool artwork or cool music videos. Cool builds that people were doing. And that was a similar thing too. It was like, it was just, there was this age of the internet where you needed people to curate it. It was just all over the place. And there wasn't so much of it that you were overwhelmed by it. I don't know. It's like weird to think about now, but it seemed like at that time, you know, it was like once a week, there was like a fresh batch of a handful of cool things to talk about and it made for some really great videos. And eventually like a combination of just way, way, way more cool stuff happening. And it also just being served to you constantly by things like Mashable and Wired and Popular Science or like IFL or whatever that
IFLS. Yes. Because you bleeping love science if you subscribe to that, right?
Yeah, Seeker still to this day I see on my timeline and it's just Mindblow. Like Seeker is just Mindblow. They have like a whole and I believe it's owned by Discovery. So it's like, okay, so Discovery created their own subsidiary network online that essentially is one show that I do on Vsauce too. And they have a whole team of people that was going to be the next thing that I went into about Mind Blow. It took me 5 days to make one episode, and that's way too long. It's an eternity on the internet. So by the time I would be done with the video, everybody's seen this stuff before. So what's the point of the video?
They have. Yeah. At a certain point, the cycle tightens up so much, and other people are very good at being quicker. It's not that you were slow or inefficient or anything. You were actually, you know, and I remember back when you were in this process, because I would send you things that I would see, because occasionally it would be a helpful thing, like, oh, check out this thing. But yeah, it's not that you had any problem with it. It's just, how do you compete with a staff of 9 people who are churning for one of these companies, just sitting there, and several are doing the research and several others are sourcing footage, and one more is writing, and like, they're almost able to record, edit, and publish this in close to real time.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what happened with them. Yeah. Well, they would put out stories that I would have used as a title and thumbnail. Uh-huh. They would do one-offs on that topic. So I can't remember what Seeker was called. It went through like several name changes, but
that was part of their campaign when it was like Seek the World or something like that, right?
Gosh, I think it was Test Tube before Seeker. And then I think it was something else before that even. I don't remember, but essentially, some topic, like robot hand or like artificial skin or something that would have been like a really great title and thumbnail, they would make a video on just that topic. Essentially, you know, the day that the news broke. So then I couldn't use that, you know, 5 days later, or even 3 days later, or 2 days later, when I was able to put out a Mind Blow. So I'd have to scrap that story, find another one that was less clickable and less interesting.
D News, by the way. Does that D sound News. Familiar?
Yeah. I kept thinking D Live in my head for something. No, for some reason. It was D News.
D News became Seeker. But I want you to describe the process of making a Mind Blow, because I think it's critical to understanding why the competition heated up the way it did. Like, I mentioned a bunch of people can churn this out quickly. And then, you know, you went into some detail on that, but I think there's another level to it. So you find the things that are really cool, that are worth making a Mind Blow out of. And how many things roughly would be in one of the episodes?
I think maybe about 10 or 12.
Okay. So let's say you've got 10 things. One of them, I'm assuming that only one thing was the feature that was in the title and thumb.
Yeah. Whatever, like thing that seemed like would be the best title or thumbnail. That would be like the main story. Yeah.
Okay. And they were about 5 minutes long. Is that fair?
Yeah.
All right. So you've got 10 ideas. One has to be a hero idea that you can build the title and thumb around. You need, probably 60 seconds on that. And then like 20 second bursts, 30 second bursts on the other 9 things.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You have to show this on video. Like, it's one thing if we jammed a segment into this podcast that's like, let's do 10 things in 5 minutes. It would be really easy. We just make that list of 10 things and then talk about it. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you would do on a YouTube video. So you've come up with your list of stuff. Then what do you do?
Well, part of the list of stuff was always took a couple of days, because it couldn't just be a good story. It also had to have like some sort of visual accompaniment.
Okay.
Some sort of visual component. And luckily, a lot of scientific papers and stuff, if you really scoured the literature and you knew where to look, you could often find video bits. That might not have been, on the PopSci or the New Scientist article, but are, buried within the actual literature. So it'd have to be something that sounded mind-blowing, something that sounded groundbreaking to the audience, something that I haven't already covered before. because after 100 of these, you start to get some overlap in the topics. And unless it's like a significant update to an old thing, which I did start doing towards the end of the show.
A few of those.
I would start.
Sure.
Yeah. Updating some projects, but most of them wouldn't even have updates, even though it had been several years. It had to have a good visual component too, because I like showing the things and not just, it wasn't a vlog, you know, it wasn't like, I think that maybe if it was more, I guess like Phil DeFranco style, where it was like me telling you the news, I could have turned them around quicker, but I liked the idea of it being like a show, like a really entertaining video and not just guy talking at me. So I liked having those visual components. So yeah, I would spend a couple of days finding those 10 things, finding all of the visual assets I could possibly find to rep. And sometimes it was hard to come up with things that were also like public domain because I wanted, you know, there's licensing issues too. I wasn't just really like ripping random stuff from the internet. So it often,
and a lot of people were at that time. I mean, they would just grab anything that fit. Yeah. I didn't want to call people out, but the system for dealing with that, identifying use that is not fair use, that was not excellent and like finely tuned in 2014. It was really a lawless land for the most part, at least compared to now. And I remember you really sticking to doing the right thing on that, staying within the confines of what you knew legal fair use was, and only that, and giving credit to every possible source as really as specifically and outwardly as you possibly could. And I know that took you a lot of time too. And some of the outlets that would just churn these things out, they are chop shops.
Oh my
god. You know,
gosh.
It's like when people have like cars stolen and you know, they take it to a place in a back alley that like rips it apart and sells the pieces. That's what a lot of those places were doing with information. So you were at a massive disadvantage because you were playing by the rules.
Yeah, it's weird to say that, but that's definitely true. Because it takes a lot of time to play by the rules. It took sometimes it would take, you know, an hour just to find a primary source on something, because even a lot of these publications that talk about science news do not link to the primary source. They won't even link to the literature or the paper that they're writing about. So then you have to like search the researcher's name or the university and see if the public, you know, whatever, like the Nature article or the JSTOR or whatever article is like viewable. And watermarking the video to, you know, the proper attribution, all of that stuff took forever. And you're right. If other people just don't care, ignore all that stuff, then it's way easier. It takes a lot less time and effort to just throw the thing out there. But look, if I were by myself and I weren't part of like the Vsauce network, maybe I would have cared less, maybe. But it's not my reputation on the line. It's my reputation.
Right. Not yours alone.
It's Michael's reputation. It's Jake's reputation. Sure. Like, I can't blow that for everyone. So, like, I have to be overly thorough because it's not just my neck on the line if I screw up. You know what I mean?
Mind blow, more like reputation blow. Oh, it's true. It's, you would have been in a much stronger position if you hadn't played by the rules. Like, that is absolute fact, that had you picked up footage from other places, not cared about communicating with people, with ironing out details. And when you were doing Mind Blow, like, this is when you and I really started to talk about the work. And you would ask, like, we would talk about things where you would put effort into getting something exactly right, which you still do, which is why there haven't been substantial problems on Vsauce 2. You would make sure that something was extremely well-sourced, that you got to the absolute bottom of what that source was. If you weren't sure if there was another possible way that this thing was valuable that you hadn't considered. You would talk to people to find out, you know, like maybe this thing has like a psychology benefit that nobody's thinking of, or maybe there's like an economics play here that I'm not considering. Well, you did that for most all of the things in MindBlow. And I don't think that's something that a whole lot of people were doing at the time or do now. Do you at all regret being so thorough?
I don't know. I don't think I regret it. I think that it was kind of the way I was happy with it. You know, I mean, to illustrate a point about like, maybe being like overly thorough, like I would go through the description and timestamp the sources. So like if I talked about some sort of like flying vehicle concept at 4 minutes and 23 seconds, you could go into the description and see 4 minute, 23 second, like the name of the thing, who did it, and then the primary sources to like follow their work. But, you know,
what you're saying is you basically invented chapters on YouTube.
Kind of.
Yeah. You kind of did.
Kind of. It's doing chapters. Yeah. 6 years before YouTube was. But yeah, I mean, there were plenty of channels that erupted around me that were just, you know, kind of doing a trivia thing without really knowing too much about whether it was right or wrong, didn't source anything. Like their descriptions would just be blank, like literally have no sources whatsoever. And I mean, you know how false so many of those trivia tidbits are, because you've been running into that with the TikToks, where like everything in these trivia books is like half right at best.
Oh, if that. I was talking to, it was either you or John Swan about this, about how it would be viable to make a channel that is purely starting from this thing that's wrong. Like the videos are taking this very confident bit of trivia that is utter trash. It's not at all accurate, and getting to the actual truth on it, but starting from the lie, basically. And it's so strange how it develops. There was one that I was looking at the other day where I read it. I knew it was absolutely a lie. There's no possible way that it's true. But I Googled the phrasing on it, and it was like 4 or 5 pages of results repeating that. And that's really what happens, is when there's like one authority on this, everybody else copies it. And that's why you had a hard time chasing down the primary sources on a lot of those scientific studies, because one place will write the article that's usually based mostly on a press release from a university that is not necessarily communicating the study well in the first place. But that article will get written, and then all the other outlets will summarize that. And sometimes outlets that are smaller, slower, less professional ones like blogs, they will summarize the summaries. And then some people cite the blogs. I mean, you get like 5 generations away from the original material here. It's maddening, but it does mean that a lot of information is just flat out garbage. It's completely wrong. I was thinking the other day, a thread popped up on Twitter that was about book burning. And it's like, you know, the worst thing in the world is burning books. I'm like, you know what? I bet I have 10 books in my possession that absolutely need to be burned. Because they're just completely, like, not as a censorship issue, they're just completely and totally valueless.
Yeah. Just as like a fuel issue, just to like make use of them.
Yeah. These will be better roasting a hot dog than anybody reading them. And not only is it more useful that way, but letting somebody read this book would actually be damaging to them.
Right. Yeah. It will make you dumber. It's one of those things. Yeah.
Yes. It will lead somebody down the wrong path. Jake Roper of Vsauce3 is asking in the chat, am I talking about YouTuber books? Only if Jake writes one. If he writes one, I will buy a copy, get the first edition signed, and I will burn it on stream.
And will you roast a hot dog over it is my question.
Yes, I'll roast the hot dog and then eat the weenie.
It's perfect.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So what happened, though? Okay, so you've talked about building this up. You've got 100 episodes. It starts to become a crowded kind of marketplace on YouTube and Facebook and all that for this type of content. What do you see beginning to happen? And when do you realize you've got a problem?
So what I did at that point is I stopped, Mindblow stopped being things that other people would be able to find easily. Okay. So what I started doing was I started going into like the dark crevices of science releases of those like public relations from universities and stuff, and finding news there, like doing real reporter work, you know, like doing like actual research, like scouring the universities, University of Michigan, Northwestern, like Washington, whatever, seeing what they were putting out, and then reporting on it. And I did that for a while. I think that I ended up doing Mindblow that way for a couple of years, because I knew that other people weren't going to be really talking about that stuff because it was too hard to find. It was just too much work to actually read like the new science literature and translate it kind of myself in a way.
I want to point out people. Like this jumps on what you're saying, but I know you won't say it. The failure rate on this stuff is incredibly high. How many things did you read to get to 10 things where you had the one hero, you had a nice narrative, a nice pace in a video? How many things do you think you read and then realized they weren't interesting enough, or it wasn't what you thought it would be when you started reading? How many items of content did you have to go through to get down to the 10 in Mindblow?
Probably 100. It was two full days of work.
50 so. Things in a day to give them serious consideration, to know what they're about and think about it and decide whether it fits. That's a lot of stuff for a day or two.
It's all I did. this is all I did. I didn't do anything else.
Yeah, I actually remember talking to you back then. This was like AOL Instant Messenger days. Like sometimes I would shoot you a message and you'd be like, hey, researching Mindblow, I'll talk to you Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You were just out of commission for like days at a time.
Yeah. It wasn't that I didn't want to talk to you. I didn't talk to anybody. I was just working because I wanted to find the best things. And, you know, that worked out for another couple of years, and Mindblow stayed afloat and stayed relevant and was still cool. And eventually that wore out its welcome too. And I think that's for a few reasons. One of the reasons is that the concept of mind blowing scientific progress, that is rare.
It kind of is.
It just doesn't happen that often. And to keep pretending like every 2 weeks there's going to be a dozen scientific breakthroughs that are going to make your head explode because they're so amazing is absurd.
It is. The pace of coolness is like, you can definitely find cool things every week. You can find 10 interesting things that are worth your time and everybody else's. But how often do you think, what do you think is a reasonable pace for finding something that is a mind blow at this point? Like, let's say 2020, if you were to do mind blow now and you wanted to make sure that everything in it was mind blowing, everybody left with a mind blown, how often would you release?
I don't know. Because the thing is, we did that episode with Chris Raygun a few months back.
Yep.
And I don't know how we got onto this topic. I think I was talking about like toilet seat innovation. And then we got onto the subject of like what would actually blow your mind at this point, scientifically or technologically.
And yeah, how iPhones were huge, right? Was that the conversation?
Yeah, I guess I was just saying that like that incremental, like hydraulic slow release toilet seat that I got is such a little thing, but it makes a really big difference that I don't have to like manually lower the whole seat every time. I can just tap it and it like slowly goes down without slamming. But the point is like that stuff happens often. There are like these little tiny incremental like baby step advancements that occur. But like no one's getting excited about how my toilet seat silently shuts.
No, no.
It happens, the thing, and then everyone just accepts it. Like, oh yeah, that's the way toilets are now. Whatever. Who cares?
My recent mind blow is using Amazon Alexa for lights. Okay. I'm like oddly obsessed with setting up, you know, little devices that play music here and there, and you know, being able to turn the lights on and off from a different room, you know, using my phone or voice. Like, this is nuts to me.
It's like Star Trek. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. And my house as well is very old, right? And so it's not built with any modern convenience at all. You know, it's probably 1880s. And so having just the slightest little bit of convenience is crazy, absolutely crazy to me. But when you think about it, what if I'm talking to somebody sometime in the future and I'm like, well, in 2020, I got light bulbs that I could activate. I could turn them on and off with my voice. In 2010, I had to walk to the next room. I had to walk down the stairs and flip the switch.
And flick a switch.
Yeah. Yeah. They'd be like, okay, so what? Yeah. Like, it's cool that that little incremental change happened. You calling it incremental was perfect because that's what it is. But ultimately, it's not like my parents talking about, like, yeah, I remember when the polio vaccine came out. You know, like, these are completely different things. And it's not like when the iPhone debuted. And all of a sudden, the phone in your pocket was a lot more than something that just made phone calls. That was a much bigger shift than I think a lot of people realize now. But they're just, like that conversation with Chris Reagan, there haven't been significant leaps. Just haven't been. So when you've got this series that is built on mind-blowing significant leaps, what do you do?
Well, so the reason I brought up Chris Reagan's reaction to that question was that I think you posed the question of like, what would impress us? What would blow our minds? And my answer was teleportation. Like, to me, teleportation would unlock things that we absolutely cannot imagine. And Reagan was like, pretty much nothing. He was like, even teleportation, you know, like 3 days later, I'd be like, whatever. Like, yeah, I would just, like, he just feels so numb to this sort of thing. And I don't think he's alone in that. I think a lot of us now are kind of, I don't know why, so cynical and so jaded to amazing things, but we definitely take them for granted. And maybe it is just that, like you say, I don't know, the things are on such a smaller scale compared to going from like steamboats to airplanes that it's like, yeah, whatever. I can turn my lights off by talking to them. Who cares?
Right. And I was researching a couple things and putting some information together the other day. And there was this realization that, the flight happened in 1903. We're on the moon in 1969. So in 66 years, we went from putting something in the air for a few seconds to landing on the moon. But that's not a shift that happens as much, because that frontier isn't quite there. You know, I think about data here, and I don't know if you ever did this, but would you ever have to install an operating system from floppy disks back in the day?
I remember booting from floppy disks.
So I had to install Windows 95 with a series of probably 60 or 65 floppy disks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You would put disk one in, start the process. It would ask for disk two, you know, and you'd sit there and swap disks and feed it for like 3 hours. Those were 1.44 megabytes, I think.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah. Okay.
Sounds right.
Right now, my internet connection that I didn't do anything special to get, I don't live in any crazy hub. I don't have some high tech office or anything. That connection transfers the equivalent of 600 of those floppy disks in 1 second.
Right.
Well, that's a massive shift. That's more than incremental to go from 65 disks over 3 hours installation to 600 disks in literally like a snap of a finger, a true instant.
Mm-hmm.
That's big. That unlocks a lot of different things. But again, it's not like cancer is cured. You know, it just hasn't happened like that. And I don't know what could happen. Yeah, that would be a mind blow.
Yeah. I don't know either, because even when you talk about
chat things, by the way, in the chat, if you've got a mind blow, if you have a true mind blow here, throw it out there. Let's see if you can get one.
Someone in the chat mentioned space travel. And I think even that, maybe the problem is like movies and TV shows, like things possible in movies and TV shows. You know, we vicariously experience them so that if they were to happen in real life, we're like, yeah, whatever. Oh, okay. Yeah. Like hyperspeed travel. Yeah, I know. I've seen that. Captain Kirk had that in like 50 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah.
But because even space travel, like people are not excited about that. Like going to Mars, people are very cynical about that as well, which would be insane if we were able to do that. Like the technology, like the hurdles involved in manned spaceflight to Mars and back. I mean, forget about just getting there. Getting back to Earth from Mars?
That's a big deal.
It's insane. And yeah. I don't know. Like
people are saying space in the chat, by the way. So like Kevin Menard, it says SpaceX's Falcon 9 landing for the first time. That was a mind blow for him. Charles Kahn, you know, saying like a spacewalk. I mean, that getting normal people to be able to do those things, that would be pretty big. And Andre APM says the SpaceX boosters landing still creep him out. And I get that. It shouldn't happen. Like when I watch that, it's like, no, this really shouldn't be possible. But here it is. And Dan Yoshua says growing organs, that's significant. There's some medical things that we don't see a whole lot of that are actually pretty advanced. I bet growing like a facility that could truly provide meat, lab grown meat, for an entire country, that would be a pretty significant sea change.
That's
one
true.
I would buy into.
Food developments would be really big. Health developments would be really big. Food developments would be really big, because ultimately you're talking about things that significantly move the needle on everyday life for people.
Yes.
And the other thing that I wanted to add, well, two things that I want to add about, you know, the journey of mind blow coming to an end eventually. One is that there was just a lot of repeats. It was like at some point, you know, doing like the fifth story about some sort of mind control prosthetic.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not still amazing, but at the same time, it's like it's still a prototype. It still has a lot of problems. We're still like really far, like flying cars too. It's another thing. And this leads into the second thing, I guess. The second thing I was going to say is that there ended up being a lot of companies that were just kind of snake oil. Like they would promise to, we're going to start sending like normal people, average citizens to the moon. And you're going to be able to buy a ticket, like just a plane ticket. And you're going to go there and it's going to happen like in the next 2 years, we promise. Or the same thing with Mars. We're going to do a reality TV show on Mars. And you just need to like invest in this company, but we're definitely going to do it. And it's going to happen. And don't worry about the logistics or the science, but that's what we're doing. Or we totally just came up with the first ever flying car. And there's no audio because it's extremely loud and would make your like eardrums pop if you actually heard how loud this thing was. But don't worry about that. It's a flying car and you should invest in us. And eventually, it's like, I'm not going to report on these, I don't know what you call them, but it was almost like charlatans. Speculation.
Yeah, like they're speculative projects that have, when you tend to get to the bottom of them, there's one little piece of a thing that might be happening that is a component of the thing that they're promising. Like that tends to be the reality, is that they've got this little advance that is a tiny little part of a potentially very big thing. You get those, you do get straight up charlatan liars. You know, you get places that make huge promises and then try to sort them out. What's the name of the documentary and the company, of the woman, the very young woman, Elizabeth something, who had the medical testing device that, you know, blew this company up into a fairly large operation, but couldn't actually make the device. There's a great documentary about this on HBO. Somebody help me in
Elizabeth
the chat.
Elizabeth Holmes.
That's right. Yes. Elizabeth Holmes. So yeah, it was like, okay, here's a machine that's about the size of a photocopier, maybe smaller. And you get this tiny little prick of blood on your finger. And this machine will run hundreds of blood tests in half an hour. And this is the ultimate diagnostic advance that we've been looking for. Right. The Inventor is what it's called. It is an excellent, excellent documentary. It came out about a year ago. Well, she had kind of a rough concept for this, but didn't actually have a prototype, didn't have a whole lot of problems worked out. Like, if you do have many different tests in one device, they require different conditions. You know, there are contamination issues. There are a thousand practical, very practical things stopping this project from happening. When they did finally get a prototype, it was, you know, it worked pretty poorly, but they promised CVS, Walgreens, I think Walmart as well. They promised everybody that we're going to put this device in your store and everybody's going to be able to come here, get their finger pricked, and that's it. No more going to the hospital for diagnostics. That's a mind blow. That's totally a legitimate headliner for an episode of Mind Blow. Well, it was fake.
Yeah.
It was fake. She had no clue. Charles Kahn is being specific about this now. Said she had no programming knowledge or any real idea of how to put it together. And I remember her not being able to have a sense of how to design the machine itself. You know, but I'd forgotten about the programming part too. You can imagine how complex this device would need to be to do all of these things. A complete and utter lie. Sorry to derail on that, but it's such a good example. And that's the kind of thing that you were dealing with over and over and over, week after week, trying to make it so you weren't going to relay a lie.
No, I didn't want to be a cheerleader. Yeah, for people who were like either actively trying to take advantage of people or just trying to get money and then whatever, get rich quick schemes, or you know, had great intentions, but you know, the thing actually had a million problems that it was just not worth getting like hyped over. So then it became a point where it's like, okay, now do I have to spend like a week like researching this company as deeply as I possibly can to like figure out whether or not like this is a scam? It's like,
yeah,
at some point there's just too many hurdles to clear. And that's it. It's like, there are too many hurdles to clear. The last hurdle that I can think of for Mind Blow was just how YouTube changed. So YouTube started rewarding watch time. So like longer videos.
Yep.
Were rewarded.
When did the 10-minute threshold kick in? Where?
What year?
Ads changed. Yeah. Do you remember that? I don't.
At this point, it was kind of a while ago. I think it was, I don't know, man. We were just talking about how hard it is to understand, to like remember internet years, mm-hmm. but yeah, Chinchilla in the it's chat the said 2016, that and that's what I was thinking.
I think he's right.
I think that's that's solid guess. Right. 2016. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Mind Blow was like a 5-minute show. And then all of a sudden, like YouTube wanted 10 plus minute videos. And it's like, okay, now I have to make a twice as long video just to kind of
that's almost make, too long.
Make YouTube happy. Yeah. And for the format, it is kind of long. It is. You do kind of get tired after a while what you of had, the Mind Blows.
What you had is kind of like a pop song. You know, that's the format of Mind Blow is this high energy pop song. And imagine like telling Lady Gaga, like all your songs have to be 11 minutes now.
Yeah. Or
write
else,
a song that,
yeah, or
that's going to be
radio
shiny.
Won't play them.
Right. Yeah. Write a 13 minute earworm once a week, please. Yeah. It's just not tenable like that. So as this is happening, you're getting served less views. They start to go down then.
Yeah, because the other thing was that the culture and expectations of the audience on YouTube also changed. So, like, no longer could I title and thumbnail a Mind Blow with one story. And then when the audience clicks the video, they get like 19 other things they didn't ask for. Does that make sense?
Mm, yes.
That was
it does.
Just a format problem where, you know, I would title the video whatever, like, invisibility cloak, I don't know, whatever. And then you click the video and it's like, here's a dinosaur and like, here's a flying car and here's like some sort of like robot doing surgery on a grape or whatever. Oh, and here's also like the invisibility cloak for like 1 minute out of like the five or six.
You're almost daring people to stick around.
Well, yeah, you have to like, I don't know. It just made people mad. They're just like, oh gosh, I didn't even think about this. So before we started recording, I created like a long list of problems that Mind Blow had over the years.
Yeah.
One of them that I completely forgot about until right now is that as YouTube changed and people, when they would click on a video, they expected to only hear about the thing in the title and thumbnail. They started to think that all of the other stuff were advertisements, which was really weird because they absolutely 100% were not. There were no, I don't think there was ever a single advertisement or brand deal in an episode of Mind Blow in 118 episodes. Maybe towards the end, I did like a couple for brilliant.org and Audible or something. But prior to that,
which fit,
there was nothing. It was literally stuff from like university research labs. But for some reason, in people's brains unfamiliar with the show and unfamiliar with Vsauce 2, they clicked the video about, you know, like this robot octopus. And then there's this video about like a bus powered by algae in the Netherlands. For some reason, they thought that like the bus powered by algae in Netherlands was an ad. And they would get really mad about that.
That's, I don't fully understand that. That's kind of irrational to me. Like, what's even being sold? Stock in the company? Are you trying to get investments for your algae-powered boss? That's weird. That's really strange.
I don't know, but there was nothing I could do about it. I couldn't, like, I don't know. What could I do at that point? Like, it was just like, all right, well, I don't know. Like, clearly this format is over. It's confusing to people. They think that like news stories are advertisements. I can't title and thumbnail things in a way that like meets audience expectations. The length of them, YouTube is not happy with. And finding
the
stories
play poorly on the platform.
Yeah, finding the stories was an insane uphill battle, and parsing which stories were like legitimate breakthroughs, which were definitely going nowhere, and which were snake oil. Like for instance, here's another thing. I purposefully stopped putting Kickstarters on Mind Blow at some point because I recognized that Kickstarters had a tremendous fail rate. Like the idea that you could just kickstart any idea and get a bunch of money, like regardless of if the thing made any sense at all. And that blew up in my face a couple of times. So then I had a rule, okay, no more Kickstarter or like Indiegogo stuff because the chances of that thing being complete garbage are really high.
Sure. No, that makes sense. So at a certain point, you decide that you've got to pull the plug on this. What did you do? Did you announce anything? Did you make a thing out of it? Did people watching The Last Mind Blow know they were watching The Last Mind Blow?
No. I didn't. And I don't think that I had really kind of like an understanding of how to talk to people about it. I mean, look, I'm finally talking about it now publicly for the first time in years since I stopped doing the show. Yeah. And that's just because recognize after still getting that comment every time I make a tweet or every time I release a Vsauce 2 video or every time I make a Facebook post, bring back Mind Blow. It's like, all right, look, guys, there are a lot of reasons why Mind Blow stopped being a show. A lot of reasons. It's not just one thing. It's not because I got bored. It's not because I got tired of it. It's not because of...
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to research, wasn't it?
Yeah. I didn't get burned out on it. There's no like... It's a multivariate problem that I tried to solve for a long time, for years. You know, there was probably a solid year and a half or 2 years where I was clearing new hurdles all the time. And eventually I just couldn't anymore. There were just too many. I couldn't get over them.
So you just had to switch into something else.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. Honestly, I say the other thing as if there haven't already been like 15 things. So that was the 16th reason. is that it was very limiting for me creatively, quite honestly. It was a lot of, I guess that's my fault, but at the same time, the format was so kind of locked in and ingrained that it was hard to deviate from after 100 episodes. But mm-hmm. It was just a lot of voiceover and delivering information, like hard science. I didn't get to be weird. And like, I started on YouTube as an outlet for being weird. And just pushing the boundaries of my ideas and imagination. And Mindflow didn't really do that. And, you know, I still don't really do that to the degree that I would like to. I do that more on my personal Twitter, as anybody who follows my personal Twitter probably can attest to. The most common response I get on my personal Twitter is, why are you like this? But
That's the most common DM that your wife sends me. But why is he like this?
Yeah.
Followed by, what was I thinking? What have I done?
Yeah, right. Exactly. But at least with the newer videos, the whiteboard videos, the logic videos, the paradox videos, I can inject stuff like Balloon Kevin, you know, where, right. All right, I'm going to make a video about like the probability of surviving Russian roulette. Okay, how am I going to visualize that? Well, I have to shoot something. Okay, well, what am I going to shoot? Well, I could get like Nerf sells basically revolvers. Like Nerf, there are Nerf revolvers. So I could get a 6-cylinder Nerf revolver. I could put a pin in one of the darts and I could shoot like a balloon head. and then what happened with that was I asked my wife to make me a balloon head because she is incredible at crafts and I'm very, very bad, very bad at crafts. So I asked her, hey, can you make me a balloon head? And then like 3 hours later, she tells me to come downstairs and she made Balloon Kevin. That was not my idea. That was her idea.
Just organically appeared. Balloon Kevin just, Balloon Kevin was a mutation that just appeared and now is there, always there.
Yeah, but Balloon Kevin never would have manifested in like Mind Blow 242.
How could you? Yeah. Nothing fit about it. The process didn't allow you to do it. The format didn't allow you to put it in. We got a question earlier and I didn't see who asked it. But I want to bring it up now because it's kind of relevant. Would you be able to do a very long Mind Blow, like 30 minutes on one topic? Would it be feasible to do like this incredible deep dive on one Mind Blow thing?
Well, I don't know, because the basic conceit of Mind Blow was that I was just going to tell you what was really exciting about a thing. And that only takes about a minute at most. After that, then you're kind of starting to get into I don't know, like the nitty gritty of it that not, I don't think is a mind blow. Like, I think at that point you're just learning how something works rather than like, that's not the mind blowing part. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. There's a lot of mundane stuff in mind blowing things.
Like a robot octopus is mind blowing. Like, here's this like perfectly articulated octopus tentacle or like robot butterfly or whatever. Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. But then spending like 29 minutes being like, anyway, so like Hans, you know, Gustafsson is the guy. Here he is. Hey, Hans. So when you were like writing the algorithm for your butterfly robot, like show us how that works. Oh, well, there are all these different parameters that, you know what I mean? Like, people probably would be interested in that, but I don't think that's mind blowing at that point. I think it's just like almost a documentary, I guess. I think what I tried to do is like longer episodes of what conceptually is mind blow was the invention of series. Cause that to me was like, here's one topic like friendship and here's like 12 minutes or whatever, 15 minutes of every angle that I can conceive of that will blow your mind about thinking about something like friendship or music or dragons. I don't know. What do you think about that? That to me was more of my attempt at doing like a singular topic extension of what I would consider to be like mind-blowing information.
I think that's accurate, that you started to think thematically, think about big questions, big themes, and then do a pretty serious deep dive into that theme. But you were kind of showing all the mind-blowing things about a subject we take for granted and we don't think about a whole lot. I don't think about why I have a cat. Like,
right.
And it's weird because I don't let other animals into my house. If an animal just ran in, I wouldn't think, oh, this is good. I will feed it regularly. I really hope it stays. I will make sure that it has timely and adequate medical care until the end of its days. I don't think that about anything that runs into my house, but I do think that about my cat. And there's a lot to unpack there. And that's what you started to do, was take friendship and pets and the color blue and unravel. You would pull on the string and show that it was a lot deeper and more connected than we realized. And it was cool to see that from the outside because I did watch somebody put together trillions of 30-second clips that were mind-blowing things, and then for years, and do a very good job with that, but then do the complete opposite and also do a very good job with that. That was a pretty cool transition to see. You know, I know it was a risk to go into the longer form content like that because it was completely different, but you laid out all the reasons why you had to and why it made a lot of sense, from production to the audience changing, their expectations changing, to YouTube serving the content, you know, and the very real implications and ramifications of that, from AdSense to sponsorships and the things that allow you to keep making videos and to make more of them.
Well, that's why those videos stopped, though, because they took me too long.
Yeah.
I would read like 9 books about like pets to make a pet video, and then all of a sudden it's been 7 weeks and I haven't put a video out. And it's like, there are a lot of channels that can operate that way. But look, like the only way you can really afford, and I mean afford, to get away with that is if those videos get several million views. If your video gets several million views every time you drop one every couple of months, that's totally sustainable. And you can, you know, pay your bills. You could probably, you know, hire an editor, whatever.
That's the Michael Reeves model.
Yeah.
You know, like you put out a video kind of when you want to, when you have a thing that comes together in such a way that your video is ready, rather than, you know, whatever you read on the guru websites, which anybody in the baby gang on the Discord, I've been raging at online gurus for a while, and not like the ones that coffee break, goes nuts over it. Like he hits scam artists and the like real estate programs that are trash and all that. But I mean like the garden variety gurus that I think suck. They're like, oh, here are the five things you need to do to make your YouTube channel bang. You know, it's like, make sure you release content 2 to 3 times a week. Like, no, not everybody can do that. Not every subject allows you to do that. Like very few, a vlog channel can do that. You know, if a family has a family blog, like, yeah, you can talk about something with your kids every 3 days. But how is Kevin Lieber of Vsauce 2 going to do that in a way that his audience is happy with? Probably can't. So, yeah, I mean, it's the opposite of that, that once in a while formula that Michael Reaves does so well, he can pull it off. You pulled it off for a while, but ultimately that's hard to do unless you are pretty sure you're going to get 3-4 million views every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. They all have to be home runs at that point. You can't hit singles. If you're releasing one video every 2 months, you just can't. So then that's where the whiteboard videos came in and doing the paradoxes and the math games. And it's not like those can get turned around every 3 days either, but
no,
they don't take 2 months. So there is like
they don't take 2 months. No.
There is like a much better compromise. And I also, as far as like the invention of series, those were the videos I wanted to do. Like I didn't have, it's weird to say I didn't have any other ideas, but I didn't have any other topics that I really wanted to explore personally in depth beyond those that I did. Like I did pets, I did friendship, I did collecting, which I was really interested in. Like why do we collect things? That was always weird to me.
Northeastern University is using that video in their first year curriculum. And I think that's a pretty cool thing and a testament to how high level that video is without seeming high level. It seems like it's something that anybody who's like 8 years old on up would get some value out of, but they're considering it in a pretty heavy capacity. I think that's very cool.
The National Baseball Hall of Fame plays it too regularly.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Collecting one because it's so heavily about Jefferson Burdick's baseball card collection, so there's a one-to-one connection there. But the invention of blue dragons.
Oh yeah, you had a bunch of how many in the invention series? About 10.
Yeah,
a little less.
I don't remember, but there was one about recording ourselves, like the history of recording ourselves. Is I always thought was a weird idea, so. You know, I explored that, made that video, job obsolescence or, you know, like automation.
Yep.
Robots replacing us. That was the first one.
Robots make us human was excellent.
Series.
Yeah.
I just kind of, aside from the them taking too long, there, weirdly enough, there just wasn't anything else that I really wanted to like read 9 books about and make a video on.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Well, I want to generalize this before we hit the questions from everybody in the live show. So how does somebody know when it's time to kill a project? When has something run its course? When do they pull the plug on that? How do they know? You know, you knew about when to actually, let's back up. Do you think that you pulled the plug on Mindblow at the right time, or should you have done it sooner?
I should have done it sooner. I mean, not that much sooner, but, well, I don't know. Like, I could have, maybe I should have done it a lot sooner, actually.
Like 6 months or a year or what?
So I was initially going to say 6 months, but then I was like, maybe I should have done it like 2 years earlier.
Wow. And really, that's really, a lot.
Yeah. But from my perspective, like, I'll just talk about the other Vsauce channels. Like, I was still doing best of the web aggregation content way later than Michael or Jake, than Vsauce okay. 1 or Vsauce 3. I carried that torch so much longer than they did. And maybe that was a mistake. Maybe I should have started doing like single topic deep dive videos. Because there was Chinchilla in the chat says Jake is still doing it. Sometimes, like, he'll still make, like, recently he made a Dong episode, which, you know, stands for do online now, guys. And he made an app all night, which
I saw that on Twitter. Yeah,
which is a show where it's a collection of cool apps you can play. But he really grew very quickly when he kind of stopped doing that regularly and was just doing the science of video games and movies videos. Pretty much primarily. That's really how Vsauce 3 blew up. And I was still doing, I just had done so many shows on Vsauce 2. There are literally entire shows I have forgotten about. And I'm not exaggerating.
That speaks to how many things were on there and how long ago it was.
Yeah, I had a food show called Grub. And I don't even remember.
I don't remember that. I don't know at all.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
I do not remember
videos were in that series, like the food video. I think there was one about like fast food around the world. There was one where I ate like weird celebrity meals. I ate like an armadillo meat. Tom just put
That's
it.
Weird.
Tom just put the Grub playlist in the chat.
Oh yeah,
incredible food from around the world. Grub. Yeah, like I had a food show. Like it's ridiculous.
How can we generalize your experience to
let me answer
kind of
your
what
question.
Everybody's doing though?
So your question initially was like when do you know when to pull the plug? So
yes, right, because everybody's doing a thing and like everybody's doing something, or maybe they're in a job and they don't know when to move on from that job. Like there are a whole lot of stopping scenarios. And there's even that branch of mathematics about optimal stopping. You know, you did a video. I can't remember what it's called, but
quit.
I had green post-it notes. Yeah.
The game you quit.
Right. Yeah. Because deciding when to quit and if to quit is a very serious force in everyday life. How do you know with a creative project?
I'm glad that you brought up the game you quit and optimal stopping theory. So I do think optimal stopping theory would have stated that I should have stopped doing those best of the web shows like probably 2 years before I actually did. I think that would have been optimal. The point at which I knew that I had to stop doing Mind Blow was the point at which I recognized I had exhausted all of the ideas and the ways I could envision it being successful. There were so many changes that I tried that didn't work that I was out of ideas on how to make it work. So at that point, I had run out of runway and that was it. I was like, I cannot even think of another thing to try. It's time to move on.
That makes sense. And when you've exhausted all options, you definitely got to go. You can go before that, like you said. You could have gone earlier had you kind of put the pieces together and made a leap. I mean, the nice thing about waiting a long time and knowing for sure that it's done is that you know it's done.
Right.
Anytime before that, sure. Yeah. There's no second guessing. Anytime before that, there's going to be some element. Anybody who's written things knows that they've started writing something and not finished it. And that they haven't gone back to it. They think they're going to go back to it. It's not like they made a conscious decision to quit a thing. Sometimes you do, but generally it's more of an abandonment issue. You know, you ghost your own creative project. And that's kind of you deciding that it's time to quit on a thing because that isn't valuable or there's simply another option that is better. It doesn't feel good to put a lot of time into something and then just stop doing it. But that's kind of how it works. You know, you've got to know when the right move for you is doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's just creative projects. I mean, you could probably take that advice to any number of things. Yeah. It's relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's jobs.
Living situations.
It truly is. Like, optimal stopping is a thing because it needs to be a thing.
Yeah.
Just pops up everywhere. And you just have to be super, super honest. It helps to have people around you too, that you can talk to about the things, because they can be honest with you in ways that you may not be able to be honest, like with yourself in that same way. Somebody can look and just say, you can do a better job. You know, here's how YouTube is. You can shift over to a different type of content and it's going to improve X, Y, and Z. This makes a lot of sense to you. Well, then it's easier to say, well, okay, I'll think about this and maybe do it. It does help to have somebody point out the problems. Like, we've talked about this many, many times, how useful it is to have people to bounce things off from. And finding somebody who you can flat out ask, is it time for me to do something else? And know that you'll get an honest response, a thoughtful response that you can really consider. That is hugely, hugely important. I wasn't in a position to tell you that in 2015 or 2016. Like, I didn't have the knowledge to do that, you know, so I wasn't that person for you. I'm thinking of all the things that I've done where I wish I'd stopped much, much sooner, but I didn't have anybody to tell me. Mm-hmm. One of the really cruddy things about doing projects alone is that you do not necessarily have somebody around you who understands that project well enough to tell you when to kill it. Mm-hmm. We talk about like advice and mentorship and all of this great stuff. Well, also, you need people who can tell you to stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
To tell you that something is stupid and this other thing is a way better use of your time and talent. Or it fits better in the marketplace, or whatever reason that has to be a green light, compare that to the thing that you need to put a red light on.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of examples of that in my personal life. The first college that I went to was an example of that. I went to Drexel University for computer science, and I would have stayed there had my parents were basically like, this is not for you. You should stop going there. Like, you should just leave. You should just leave college. This was not long after I had been there. And I was like, what? They're like, yeah, this is obviously not like the path for you. You should just
leave. What's your life like today if you didn't have somebody tell you that? What city are you working in a tiny cubicle with like amiibo figures?
I would have freaked out, and I never would have done that anyway, but they knew that about me and I didn't know that about myself. And that's kind of like my point. And I think your point ultimately here is that you need to have people in your life that in some ways know you better than you know yourself in some ways, obviously not in all ways, because that's completely impossible and ridiculous. But I can guarantee you there are people in your life that know things about you that you don't know about you.
Totally. Yeah. 100%. I think virtually everybody has that. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds nutty. It sounds crazy, but it's absolutely true. And it's freaky when you start to see it in action, but eventually you come to value that and rely on it in a way. And it's extremely powerful when you have allies like that. You know, where you can trust somebody's judgment and know that they actually know you well enough to be useful, you know, to help you, to truly help you.
Yeah. 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 Because they can, I mean, that's what my parents saw me struggling with the computer science stuff, and they knew about me. They knew, like, you are not going to be happy going down this path. Like, we know this about you, even though you think you're convinced, like, this is like your college major and you have to have like a prestigious college major or else you're nothing, you know, because this is, you know, this is America and you are the age of a college student, so you have to go to a very expensive private university, and you have to get a degree in which, you know, a science degree so that you know you can use like post-graduation and get like a great job and get paid X amount of dollars a year and the health insurance, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's what I had in my head. And they were the ones who were like, yeah, no. Like, that is a wonderful path for you know, plenty of people, but not for you.
Just and not the Kev Lieb.
No, that would not have worked out for me. And then
I was surprised. Right. I mean, I didn't know you 20 years ago as well as I do now, but I would not have really pegged you as somebody going into that track. I don't know if I would have had a good suggestion for you, but yeah, no, it seems like a surprise. Unexpected.
Yeah, it just went back to the fact we've talked about on other podcasts where, you know, I just had never been exposed to like creative disciplines before. So I just figured, well, yes. I like computers and this major is about computers. So I guess I'll be a computer major. That did not work out for me, but I would have stayed at Drexel. I probably would have gotten straight C's and
there's nothing wrong with that.
And I would have had a lot of debt because it was expensive.
Things would have been very different in the end.
Yeah. I would have had the flexibility, I don't think, later. I definitely would have not have had the flexibility later to just be like, I'm just going to work at a chicken wing joint and make YouTube videos in my spare time.
No, you would have been grinding on something you probably didn't want just to keep up with normal expenses and paying off the student loans and the rest.
You know, it definitely worked out.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You wouldn't, after putting that in, it is kind of the sunk cost fallacy. And this is, you know, that's something that I dealt with a lot, because I've never worked in a field that I studied. Well, that's not true. I've never had like a W-2 job in the fields I studied. And that's, yeah. I mean, I had the flexibility to do other things, and that was awesome. And if I'd stuck with it, if I'd bought into that sunk cost fallacy where it's like, Boromir, sorry, by the way, happy birthday, Boromir.
Yes.
He asks W-2 job. W-2 is the tax form you get in the U.S. that are wages associated with full-time employment or part-time employment too, right?
Yeah.
But it's above being like a freelancer. You're an actual employee. So, you know, a W-2 job is like your main job. But yeah, if you believe in the sunk cost thing, you're like, okay, I did this for 4 years in school, maybe longer. Maybe you got a master's. Maybe you just took 5 or 6 years to graduate for a lot of reasons. It's like, well, I've got to make use of it. You know, that crushes your ability to do other things to stay in that field. And I had people, you know, who told me, you don't have to do this. You can do other things. So, you know, things worked out for both of us, partly because we had people to help us change paths and use our talents in a way that's...
And we listen, though. Like, that's the other thing.
That's true.
You also have to be willing to listen if people give you advice that you might not want to hear. It's important.
I don't want to be too self-congratulatory about it, but you're right. We had the good sense to take that advice.
And
a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
I didn't really fight it at all.
Like an egomaniac about it. Like, you have to sometimes be like, what I'm doing is stupid. I've made a bad choice and I probably should at least attempt to rectify that in some manner. Like, that's not necessarily an easy thing to do either.
Well, we have a few questions.
Okay. Well, before we get to the questions, let me just say, as long-winded as that was about the story of Mind Blow, I think that will give you an indication as to why I haven't really like made a tweet about it.
Can you express that properly?
It's like,
how?
It took me about an hour to explain what happened to that show. So there you go.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Although the first question calls into question everything that you've said for a while here. This is from Jake Roper of Vsauce 3. He wants to know whether you have talked about how you actually stopped Mind Blow because you sold the show concept to the Mexican cartel for $10. Can you address that? I don't know if that's a typo, if he meant 10,000, 10 million. I assume 10 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of that makes sense. So what is the Mexican cartel doing with Mindblow? they're entertaining each other as they smuggle goods across the border with scientific discoveries.
The truth then, now that everybody's gotten the lie of Mindblow's life and death, the truth with the Mexican cartel will have to be another episode.
I suppose so, yeah.
Jeff, this one's for you because I have no answer to it. Kevin, this is from Jeff. How do you feel about the Borderlands games?
Oh, well, I've never played Borderlands 1, but I did play Borderlands 2 a bit co-op with my wife back in the day. And I thought it was fun. I like the mixture of kind of like RPG elements with a first person shooter. We started playing Destiny 2 last week, which is also kind of like a first person shooter online co-op RPG sort of thing. And Monohim calls it a looter shooter. Okay, I didn't know that. I'm so
it's a great term.
Like unfamiliar for the most part with first person shooters. Mostly I play role playing games, but the ones that mix the RPG elements I think are pretty cool. Looter shooters. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. I'm surprised I haven't heard that. We'll go back to Jake. This is from Elevenzies. What do you think of Jake's OnlyFans?
I was shocked because let me tell you, he did not run that by me.
Really?
Usually Jake Roper will run by, titles and thumbnails by me before, or even the video itself before he releases it to the public. This one blindsided me. So I might need to have a conversation with him about that. Maybe that was his intent. He just wanted to not only shock the world, but shock me as well. And he did. I wish him well, though.
It certainly worked. Yeah, me too. Good luck with the OF. We have two that are kind of together here. Baseweight asks, what's on our Christmas list? And Andrew asks, what are good Christmas list items to ask for? I don't know if these are going to be the same answer or not. I think mine are excellent. Like, they satisfy both questions. But I don't know what's on your list. Anything on your list yet?
I don't really have a list. No, I don't really make a list, but, I only get gifts sometimes I get gifts from my parents still, and they'll usually get me some sort of like winter jacket. That seems to be like the go-to or like sweater, cause it gets very cold in the winters here. But my wife is a phenomenal, gift giver.
She really always, is.
Yeah, it's like a serious talent.
She's probably the best. Yeah.
So I never have any idea what I'm going to get. It's always a surprise, which is the fun part. That's if you're just going to get the thing that you, I don't know. It's fine. But to me, it's like, if you're just getting the thing that you asked someone to give to you, it's like, hey, thanks for getting the thing that I told you to get for me. I don't know. Like, that's fine if people want to do that. But to me, it's like, I don't see a whole lot of excitement there. Unless, I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I want cheese in block form. I haven't really eaten any cheese in 2020. I've had some sliced cheese, but I haven't had like a 2-pound block of extra sharp cheddar.
I knew yours was going to be food, but I thought it was going to be some sort of like meat preparation device.
Well, no, I have a lot of that, but I was thinking a couple weeks ago, I just have not eaten cheese in a really long time. I love sharp cheddar. When we went, do you remember that wheel of cheese that I bought when we were in the Dutch Islands?
No.
Do you remember that? I bought a 10-pound wheel of Gouda. On the way back.
Dutch islands? What Dutch islands?
Yeah. From the cruise. So like St. Martin and all those are actually, you know, Netherlands territory. And so the shops that they had, you know, they had all of this Gouda and Dutch cheese. It was amazing.
I mean, I've said before that my memory is bad. I don't remember anything about that, any of that at all.
It was huge. It must have been over, 12 to 16 inches across and probably 6 inches deep.
Was it awesome?
It was outstanding. It was so good. Yeah.
How did you eat it? How did you eat it with crackers or by itself, or did you
melt it? I cut it into big pieces and gave those to my family so that, you know, like if you cut it into tenths, like everybody gets a pound. But yeah, I baked some, you know, just ate some straight, no chaser. put some with, you know, crackers and stuff. It was amazing as grilled cheese. You know, I had a lot of cheese to use, so I used it a lot of different ways. But yeah, I haven't had cheese in block format. That's why I thought, well, this is a good gift for everybody.
Because I'm thinking of you talking about you had to use it in so many different ways, and thinking about Bubba Gump,
Bubba
from Forrest Gump, talking about like 98 ways to prepare shrimp. Yeah, that's you with your endless block of
with
cheese,
my Dutch Gouda,
fried cheese. Cheese sandwich, brick of cheese, cheese on cracker, eggs and cheese.
It's a good gift for everybody. If somebody's lactose intolerant, they should be punished. So it's a good gift for them.
They are punished when they eat the cheese.
They are. Yeah. And by the way, Google that sometime. Everybody listening, Google lactose toleration globally, because the map of it is really fascinating. I did not realize when I was young that it's a regional thing. There are huge swaths of the world that are lactose intolerant, and the U.S. is not one of them. But when you go higher or lower, the percentage of people who tolerate lactose, it plummets. It plummets. Like, I forget what Africa's toleration percentage is, but it's like 30-40%. It's crazy.
Well, have you read about that? Because from what I understand, and it's been a while since I read about it, everyone was lactose intolerant until not long ago. And then there was some, like, I'm going to butcher the history of this, but you could Google this. There is like a story about some small region that was able to start breaking down and digesting or whatever, like horse milk. Mm-hmm. And like eventually, you know, they procreated enough that other people could tolerate horse milk or whatever it was. But is this ringing any bells?
It is. It definitely had to be a process. And people are posting in the chat these maps, by the way. Kevin, I don't know if you've seen it, but take a look at this. The red parts or the dark parts and some of the blue scale maps, like there are entire continents that have trouble with cheese.
Yeah, I've read about this before. It's a really interesting story. And I wish that I remembered it better. But if anybody really wants to Google and read about a very interesting story that you never would have thought was interesting, then yes, read about Juliana in the chat says, the invention of lactose ingesting Homo sapiens. That should have been my last invention
that
of series.
That could be a video.
The invention of digesting milk. Yeah.
There's still time. There's still time to do it.
Yeah.
The last little bit is also from Baseway. He just wants me to tell him something. And what I'm going to do on this is, it's very quick, it's very short. The chat's actually already seen it because I kind of slipped and copy pasted and sent the thing that I had for an answer to this. I meant to put it in a document so I wouldn't forget, but I accidentally put it in the Discord chat. So the live viewers may have seen this, but it's important to know when we were talking about storage. I came across this a couple weeks ago. We were talking about the data on floppy disks. Well, one single sperm has 37.5 megabytes of DNA information on it. What that means is that to store all the data from a single sperm, you would need 26 of those floppy disks I was talking about earlier. That's crazy. That's nuts. That's a mind blow. 26 Wow. floppies for the data of one sperm.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and you were talking, Kevin, a few weeks ago, I guess it was us talking, not on a platform somewhere, about transporting data and teleportation, and how that's an obstacle because the sheer volume of data that has to move is outrageous. And this plays into that, where, hey, if you need 26 disks for that one cell, what's it like for a whole body?
Oh, it's impossible. Yeah. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but I know the analogy. And the analogy is that to teleport like a human body's worth of information just from, you know, Earth to a spot in orbit right above us, would take, I think, I think 350,000 times longer than the universe has existed.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. You pasted something about that and it was untenable. It was just like not even possible.
It's not something you can comprehend like even a little bit. I mean, the universe is like 14 billion years old. So to tell, just to transfer that amount of data.
Which I have no sense of.
Would take 350,000. Yeah, it's all just gobbledygook.
They're
at that
just
point.
Numbers at that point.
Yeah.
You can't.
What does that mean?
Look, we were, how many times were we talking about how, oh, this thing happened? Was it 4 years ago or 7 years ago? It doesn't take a whole lot of time before we can't really process it. So,
yeah.
You know, when we're going tens and hundreds of thousands of years, it's completely hopeless.
Trillions of billions.
Hopeless.
Are there any other questions?
And that's the, no, we've got one more, but it's going to be too long. We'll save it for next time.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. No, it's a good one about the origins of the baby gang, where that name came from, and to go over the whole scenario and how it developed and the utter awkwardness that we caused talking about it in front of those people. It just takes a little more time than I think we have.
All right. Well, I hope that this was an illuminating podcast into the world of Vsauce 2 and how things have changed. I mean, we could do equally probably long episodes about any number of shows over the years, but honestly, I think that this mind blow story encapsulates a lot of the evolution of the channel and kind of, you know, where it's at today. But,
it's extremely representative of what everybody else is working on too. And the YouTube channels that haven't faced an issue like this, they're going to. Most of the YouTubers you're fans of have not been around long enough to go through this cycle.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Very few of the people we've talked to have gone through that cycle. You know, I think of Glozell being the super obvious example of having to crush some formats and move on and reinvent and all that stuff. But yeah, most people haven't been around long enough to have to reinvent, to have to kill the thing that got them notoriety. But if it hasn't happened to you, it is going to happen.
Well, and you can also look around at people who are still making the same thing and it's not going well, but they just refuse to, Charles Kahn says pivot. Yeah, they refuse to pivot. Yeah. It's like, you might want to pivot. That's the word of the day. Really, I like evolve better though, because pivot just seems like you're making a turn, but really it's such an iterative
sometimes
process
that works.
That, you know,
yeah, sometimes that's
a
enough.
Lot of steps.
Most of the time, I think it's a lot more similar to yours where you do a substantially different thing. But if you can pivot, so much the better. Like, that's cool. If you can adjust, that's awesome. But sometimes you just need to leap. You need to leave. You know, go to a different place, put your feet somewhere else rather than twisting around. But yeah, both can work.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. All right. Well, thank you to all of our patrons and thank you to all of the new people who joined the Discord to listen to this and hopped in. That was really, really, really cool to see. If you want to join us for future recordings, we're always here every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Just join the
Patreon. Except for right now. The rare Thursday. We had to push by a day, but that's the first time that we've done that in many, many, many weeks. So Wednesday, 6 p.m. is where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah. Just go to patreon.com/thecreateunknown. Become a $2 tot. Start there. Just start as a little tater tot. And then who knows? Who knows where it'll go? Who knows how you'll evolve into a French fry and then eventually a whole baby potato. Stranger things have occurred. That is a mind blow. But yeah, thanks again to everyone for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. And if you have any other questions about mind blow, keep them to yourself. No, I'm just kidding. Let me know. Join
the
Discord.
Ask Kevin Daly for the next Ask Him Daily until 2024.
Ask me forever. No, I don't really see stuff on Twitter or Facebook. But I will in the Discord. So join us, join the Discord. You can find the links everywhere. And until then, we will see you, Space Cowboys.
Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. We'd like to extend a huge thank you and a congratulations to the listeners who made our Save the Babies drive a success. Many new $2 Tots and Dumpster Crew members, you have saved tiny little lives. A tremendous shout out to our elite baby gang. Trevsted, Boromir, Bot Dogs, Chinchilla, Cat, Isaac, Conrad, James Gallagher, Jeff Davis, Patrick Pister, Baseweight, and our newest sweet little babies, Dojangles and the Catboy Latermint. And thank you to our grizzled, battle-hardened child infantry, Jen Mafasanti, Kevin with an E Menard, Mikhail Steinke, Risebread, Sean Malone, Triple Question Mark, Monahim, and the newest recruit, Private First Class Ryan Kinder. Thank you to our producer and editor, Ben Webster, and our social media manager, Dan Yoshua. The Create Unknown is an Unknown Media production.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.